comedic timing is a skill, just like anything else. And yeah, I know.
I lack it, so I have no idea what that's like.
Thank you for admitting, because everybody thinks they can do it.
I can't do it. I cannot.
I appreciate that.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Envelope. Kelvin Washington alongside Yvonne Villarreal, also Mark Olson. Great to have you two here this week, as usual. Everybody well, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Good. All right, let's get to it. So, Yvonne, someone I've never met, but I'm going to be sad if she's not as pleasant or just as fun and hip as she seems, Janelle James. Just feels like I know her, even though I don't. Tell me about your experience.
I have to tell you, I was super nervous that she was going to hit me with some, like, one-liners about my appearance or something.
She's got the zingers.
She's got the zingers. No, but she was super lovely. She plays the blunt and hilarious Principal Ava Coleman in Abbott Elementary. And she's done an amazing job in that role because she's already been nominated 3 times for an Emmy. But season 4 brought a lot of depth to this, you know, seemingly incompetent and uncaring character. We really see how she comes to bat for the students at the school, maybe in some unorthodox ways, but in ways that really help them. We also see a little bit of her relationship with her father. She also develops a relationship of her own, a romantic relationship. And spoiler alert, I'm giving you guys time to dial down the volume.
Just hit the little 15-second thing or something? Okay.
Her character was fired this season, and I'll just leave it at that. Okay. But we talked a little bit about all of that, all the development that we saw from her character this season.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. I'm telling you, you got to keep up.
No, I'm just saying,
Kelvin.
Why is it me? I'm just saying, it could be someone listening.
Sure.
Mark, I swing over to you, and...
Yeah, I didn't know she got fired.
Aaron Pierre, let's just go there. Let's just say the 3 Washington girls in my household, my daughters, including my 3-year-old, Aaron Pierre.
That's Mufasa, all
for about a good month and a half.
Is that how you started the interview?
We did talk about Mufasa, but I didn't say it quite.
You didn't
like that.
Do it like, oh, come on.
Well, you know, the TV movie category in the streaming era has just become really exploded, and it's become a much more dynamic category than it had been in the few years previous. And Rebel Ridge, which stars Aaron Pierre, is really a great example of that. Written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier, the film stars Aaron as a man who comes to a small town. He wants to bail his cousin out of jail, and he runs afoul of the crooked local sheriff. And it just, there's some... becomes this really muscular and exciting action thriller. Aaron brings a real gravitas and power to his role and has some very exciting fight scenes. And also, this is just such a great time for Aaron Pierre. I think, you know, that he, as you said, that he just was the voice of Mufasa and Barry Jenkins's Mufasa the Lion King. And then he also is going to be seen in the next series of The Morning Show, and then is currently filming Lanterns, which is a DC Green Lantern property.
You can always kind of see certain folks have that moment where the boom happens, right? And they just take off. And then someone's going to go, where'd this person come from? Not knowing the whole, it takes 10 years to become an overnight success. He's been putting in the work for years. All right, well, let's get into Yvonne and Janelle James. Let's start it now.
Janelle, thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm cheating already. What's them questions? Okay.
What question do you want to start with?
I mean, you want me to get to choose?
No.
Like, that's all.
No, no. You're in this big career moment, and it feels like you've met it so perfectly. In what ways did you feel ready for it, and in what ways has it just thrown you for a loop?
Ooh, I mean, I feel ready for this career moment, but not only moment, but this career from performing for 15 years prior to getting this role. So maybe not on screen, but I've been performing, you know, for a long time. And what has thrown me for a loop is fame. Like, I didn't, I had no concept of what that meant. I had no concept of what being on a show that immediately takes off entails and what that feels like. So yeah, that's definitely been a surprise.
Can you break it down what it does mean to be on a hit broadcast sitcom? Like, how have you had to reconfigure your life, or what has, like,
can't been- go outside, can't, you know, can't go to Target. Not that we are, can't go to Target. I remember my first, the first season I was in Target, and I was looking at doormats, as you do.
Yes.
And this guy comes up to me And I didn't see him. I heard him say, "I got to hug you." And I was like, "He not talking to me because I don't know this man." And he picked me up off the ground. This huge guy picked me up off the ground and gave me a hug, which I'm sure was in love, but that had me shook. Like,
yeah.
And I remember I went to work the next day and it was on my face that I was shook. Like, what just happened? And Tyler, my co-star, was like, "What's going on with you?" And I was like, "This man like picked me up, a stranger picked me up in Target and to compliment the show, I guess." And he was like, "What are you doing in Target? Like, you can't go to Target anymore." And that used to be my happy place. And so that was an adjustment. Like, I just, people knowing who I am when I'm in my jammies.
Yeah.
Trying to get some gummy bears. Mm-hmm. That's great. Basically. Yeah, that's a big adjustment. Yeah.
I was with Chris Perfetti at a museum, and it was like kids on their field trips. And the way kids came up to him and were ready to share, like, you know, what they're learning in school, all these things.
And I'm way more famous than him.
What?
That was a joke.
What do you hear most often? And do you feel the need to be on as Ava? Because this is what people are expecting from you.
Oh, my God. What do I hear most often? I'm a principal. I know a principal like you. I also went to school. I mean, that's the thing. I feel like that's part of the reason the show is a hit. Who hasn't gone to school? You know, it resonates with a lot of people because they've had the experience. And do I feel the need to? Yes. Yeah, you don't want to disappoint people. And I think this, you know, I've learned to take the approach of people approaching me as Ava as a compliment. Like, "Oh, I'm doing this character so well." They think that it is me that they're talking to. They're like, "Oh, I just stepped off the screen and now I'm in Ralph's," uh-huh, for some reason, although she would never be shopping for herself. And then I want to, give them what they want. And then sometimes I don't. So I just stay in the house.
Yeah. Good. Well, Ava Coleman, the character you play, she's had so much character development this season. Mm-hmm. And it was very earned, too. I mean, she started out the series as this very polarizing character. You know, she can be rude. She's not politically correct. She really won over the audience in the course of the run of the show. I'm curious what it felt like for you to really get in depth with her this season. We get more of her background. We see her open herself up to a relationship. And we see just how far she's willing to go for the students. So what was it like to dig into her a little bit more?
I mean, I was really proud and also like just honored that Quinta and the writers like trusted me with the material that they're giving me. And then also, yeah, like you said, it's earned. I feel like it was time. Mm-hmm. There's been like little dribbling out of her character over the seasons, but this, you know, to me was like an Ava season, mm-hmm, basically. And so just like, yeah, really happy that they trusted that I can bring these like different flavors to her, and also just a testament to like the writing, mm-hmm, that you know, this is a sitcom. It's 22 minutes and we're doing so much story and in such a short time, and to be able to, for instance, reveal about her dad or have a dramatic moment and then go right back into comedy. And then I've only been on screen for maybe 4 minutes and you've already found out so much about her it's amazing. And it makes me feel very talented.
What were your conversations like with Quinta? Cause were you itching? Were you wondering, am I going to get a chance?
No, I'm not my business. I've been in a writer's room before and I know nobody cares what the actors think. I know we certainly did it when I was this. I just try to let them do their gig. And because they have been doing such a good job, I mean, that's why we're ahead. They've been doing a great job with the show and developing the characters. And I feel like each one of us gets a year. I feel like first season was a Barbara year. Second was Tyler. And then this one. So I'm never worried or trying to involve myself. I'm so lucky that Quinta is like the coolest boss and that she gives me a heads up for like big stories.
Right.
I'm never like, what? You know, or like, oh, I feel this. I know I have said things to her, you know, on the side that ended up happening. And then I'm just like that they decided to go with my idea, but I'm never like, I have a pitch. Like, mm-hmm, I think that's, I would be annoyed with that.
Okay.
You know, if it's my show and I feel like I'm killing it, I don't really want to hear a, mm-hmm, pitch from the actor. My job is to make those words feel real and convincing. And that's it. Yeah.
The father element was a revelation for me. I'm curious what that unlocked for you. I mean, we see Ava's father is played by Keith David, and it felt like it showed you were able to capture so much about the sort of daddy issues that she has and where some of the maybe hardness or prickliness comes from. But we also see like the slight moments of vulnerability as she's sort of confronted with either knowing that he's inquiring about her or he's trying to help in the end. What did that reveal to you about Ava?
I mean, exactly what you said. It is just more about her ethos and why she is like she is, why she's so untrusting, why she's so like short with people, doesn't want to get close with anyone because she's already been disappointed by somebody that's very, you know, as we find out in the date episode, that was very important to her and then abruptly went away to start another family. So I thought that was like a really great way to show that. And then also to show her strength, you know, he comes in, she sees they have that moment, but then she's back to Ava right away. Like I feel like Ava just like keeps it moving, you know, and so to her detriment sometimes, like doesn't process, but that, yeah, it makes sense. And that's what I like about the writing for the characters on this show. Like everything we do makes sense. It seems very real. It's relatable. Like so many people wrote me and said, you know, I have this situation with a parent and it struck me as real. It also, illuminated for me what I think is the most important relationship on the show is Janine and Ava, and how we have similar background and parental issues, but we're coming at it from different ways. She's coming at it with endless optimism, and I'm pessimism, you know. And so we're opposite sides of the personality spectrum. But I think as the show goes on, we're moving closer and closer together. I think that's just like so smart and good story development. Yeah.
And we see that Ava gets fired near the end of the season. Did Quinta or the writers prepare you for this coming, or did you read it in the script? Okay, they prepared
So Quinta told me, I don't know how, maybe like a couple days before, like, you're going to get fired, you know? And again, I was like, okay. I think I did say, like, oh, do I still get paid? Which I meant. Do I still get paid? Because I thought that meant I wasn't going to be in the show at all. So I'm like, can I just pop in and get paid or what? Just let me know. Yeah, I wasn't concerned about like being off the show because that didn't make sense story-wise to me. I don't know why they would have done that. And I don't think she would have pitched it to me so casual if I was like out of a job. But again, just trusting them, I was like, oh, if I'm getting fired, that means we about to shake something up and it's going to be, and I would love to see the reaction to it, which was fabulous. That was like one of the best days of my life.
But it's again, goes back to the earning where you've reached a point where the audience wants you back, wants to see Ava back.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, how do you think like your background in stand-up and playing to either packed crowds or nearly empty venues, mm-hmm. and having to sort of win over having to win over an audience, like, how did that prepare you for?
Exactly. Yeah. Girl, exactly what you said. No, that's my, even when it's a packed house of people that love me, my stand-up is also very antagonistic. And that's for my own pleasure. Mm-hmm. because I do like that. Oh, I'm going to say something that you might not agree with or you don't find funny or touches you in a certain way. And then you're going to love me by the end. I'm going to make you laugh. It is a power in that. And so, yeah, that definitely, this whole stand-up has definitely prepared me for this whole like Ava arc of people being like, I don't like her. And I'm like, yeah, really? You don't? Okay, we'll see. Season four.
Can you tell me about a time where you just felt like you bombed and how you turned it?
Okay.
What's the moment that stands out?
Just bombed, because I had bombed and then just went home and had this one tear. Bombed and came back. I mean, I feel like that's every set. Truly, I like to craft a set, especially if I'm doing an hour, where it has different levels. Of course, you want to crush the whole time, and I am. Yeah. But I like my jokes to have downbeats and then ba-da-ba, you know. I'm not really like a one-liner, which is what Ava was for a long time. So that's been a new muscle for me to do, where I'm just saying a line and have to hit those beats. But I like to do a joke that has different peaks and valleys to it, and where people are like, you see them physically drawing back, and then they're like, ah, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's what I like about stand-up, that instant reaction and the feeling of winning.
Do you get the nerves doing Abbott the way you get the nerves of stand-up?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like if you don't get nerves, that means you don't care.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, yeah, did I say 15 years? Jesus. 15 years doing stand-up. I still get nervous beforehand. 4 seasons doing Abbott, I still get nervous, you know? It just means that I care about my performance.
Abbott is a single camera show. You're not filming in front of an audience, mm-hmm. and you're used to doing your stand-up in front of people. Mm-hmm. What is like a signal to you that you're delivering Ava the way you want? Is it hearing a cameraman sort of his laughter come through, or breaking one of your scene mates?
I mean, sure, all of that, but also I'm just confident in my comedic timing at this mm-hmm. point. Like, I don't need a response. I love it. I don't need a response anymore to know that I've like hit the beats. Like, comedic timing is a skill just like anything else. And I know.
I lack it, so I have no idea what that's like.
Thank you for admitting, because everybody think they can do it.
I can't do it.
I appreciate that. I'd like to hear a man say it. Never will happen. But I always say, you know, my confidence in myself and in what I'm doing is earned. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of people, I think that's part of what some people don't like in Ava. Like, some people don't like confident mm-hmm. people because it makes them think about themselves. And I feel like it's okay to be confident. It's a confidence in narcissism, but this is, my confidence comes from putting in the work. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, you know, and I have the respect of my peers in comedy and now in acting. And so, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And so I don't really need the instant feedback, but it's lovely to have it, which is why I'm back on stage.
Do you think she always had it?
Always had it, Ava?
Yeah.
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 Especially, like I said, the first season, I'm the joke machine.
Yeah.
You know, so again, like, one-liners wasn't my thing, you know, but yeah, I know what the beats are. I know what a joke's supposed to sound like and how mm-hmm. it's supposed to hit and how it's supposed to parry off of another statement. So, yeah.
What I love so much about the way the writers...
Did you say parry? Is that a word? I don't know. Anyway.
I'm just like,
edit that out.
I'm not going to question it.
Is that tennis? Parry? I might have made it up, but hey,
none of
confidence.
Us know. Yeah, confidence.
It's a word.
One of the great things about the show and what the writers, how they build the characters, is the seemingly small details that say so much about the characters. Mm-hmm. For Ava, it's like the party bus. She owns a party bus, or she dated Allen Iverson, or she hasn't used capital letters in years.
Yes.
What are some of the details that you've loved learning about her?
I mean, one of my favorites was and is that her hello sign is facing her. And that was totally a mistake when we did that. I had turned it and props turned it back. And both me and Quinta was like, no, that's funny if it's facing, you know, and now that's become a thing, because that's totally something she would do. Like, don't come in here. Anybody that comes in, she's like, don't come in my office. I'm doing my side hustles. Like, I'm not really trying to talk to you. So no, hello. Hello to me. You're doing a great job, Ava. You know, so I love that. I love just the continuity of our props department is hilarious in that I think season one, we took the picture with Gritty.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She was like, she says, oh, this is a cute picture. I'm going to have to Photoshop Janine out, and then behind me for the whole season, not only Photoshop, which I think is even more cutting, is she literally cut her out in a picture with like scissors. That's like some real hate.
It's real hate.
I love that. And the fact that she does know all these people that she's talking about, like she does have, she's popular outside the school. She has all these hookups. Just recently she had her list of high net worth drug dealers that can but also that rings true. Like, that's who she would know. And those are the high earners in a neighborhood like that. It just, again, excellent story telling to remind people where we are.
Yeah.
We're in the inner city of Philly. Like, yeah, that's who she knows. She grew up in that neighborhood. She knows them. She know they got money. That's her friends, you know? But she just happens to be a principal.
As you mentioned earlier, I mean, you've been in writer's rooms before. You were on The Rundown with Robin Thede, Black Monday. How does being in the sort of behind the scenes and knowing what goes into making the show, how did it sort of inform you as a performer?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I leave them alone. Mm-hmm. I know it's a different process than what we're doing. I know it's difficult to craft out a whole season. I've never been on a show that's done 22 episodes, and we just like back-to-back bangers. Like, that's amazing. Even more reason to leave them alone. Yeah. Like, they know what they're doing. Yeah. Quinta knows what she's doing. I feel like Quinta has a vision, not only for each season, but from the start of the show to when we eventually end it. I know for me, as the seasons go on, I've become more comfortable with suggesting things and maybe improvising and, but only, yeah, only when asked, and I always ask first. I always try to say what's on the paper. I never try to be like, oh, what I think might be funnier or whatever, even though that's what I believe. But I always do what's on the paper first. And then I say, hey, I have a suggestion, da da da. And then I get to find out what everybody, if they chose mine or not. And they frequently do.
How were you in writer's rooms?
How was I?
Yeah.
I feel like you got inside information.
No, I don't. Please share with me. Because it feels like it's intimidating.
Nah. You know? I mean, it depends. I guess for some people, I ain't intimidated by much. But I know, yeah, I'm a joke machine. Like, I've only written for comedies so far. So that's my bag. Pitch. If you want a joke, I'm all day with it. And then I have a story. I thought you had inside information is with Black Monday when I first started. All the, you know, it's usually men. And was I the only woman? There was two women in that writer's room. One of my favorite jobs, by the way. Let me just say that.
Uh-huh. But I think let's preface.
Uh-huh. And all the men are pitching, and I said, and I was just like, and I had just gotten there because I came in like half, you know, late to the season. And my boss, David Cass, was like, what's going on with you? And I was just like, none of this is funny. I'm trying to pitch funnies. I forget what I said. I said, none of this is funny. Like, I just waiting to hear some funny shit or something like that. He wrote it on the window and it stayed there for the whole season. I mean, we're seeing it written. I was like, that's not a lot. But I meant it. So.
How did your fellow writers feel about that?
They love me. Someone just recently hugged me and everything. But yeah, they think I am. Yeah.
Would you ever want to write an episode of Abbott?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was just talking about that with some. I don't know if we're allowed. I also don't know how it would work because I wouldn't be in the room to like build with them. You know, they start way before we do. And I know each episode is like assigned to a writer, but it's already like pretty formulated by then. I don't know if I would write like a one-off type of situation, but however it would work out, I would love that. Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Mm.
Please.
From
who would
the camera? Quinta.
Who would it interest you in writing for? Which character?
Ooh. I mean, I think Tyler's character is so interesting. And funny, like, I just think Tyler's comedic timing is so, like, funny and underrated. Quinta, too. I love the Janine character. I know myself. Duh. I mean, everybody. I feel like I know the least about Barbs. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I would maybe write her too much as a caricature. Just.
I can only imagine the lines Easter you give.
Easter Sunday, every line. And yeah, Chris too, like just some real free, ooh, almost cursed. Some real hijinks for him.
Do what you want.
Yeah, some real fucking hijinks. Oh, that was in me the whole time. I was like, oh God, can I say one curse word?
Let it out.
Yeah. Anybody, yeah. Just of course, like a group. One of my favorite things to do as a cast is when we're in a group in the kitchen and we're all bouncing off of each other. Those are my favorite scenes. So yeah, anything.
What's it like filming with the kids? You don't do it as often as some of the other.
It's great. I mean, I'm just always constantly surprised and impressed with how chill they are. And I know me, like, we do it three times. I'm like, all right, I'm done with that. But they are engaged and they're doing it and they're good. And it's so amazing because I know especially first season, we had a lot of kids who had never acted before, who aren't even like professional actors. And part of that that I want to get out is that, you know, a lot of Black kids, which we want to represent where we are, it's very hard to be a child actor. Yeah. Like if your parents have to work and, you know, a lot of times if you're like a professional child actor, your parent has quit their job because they got to drive you around auditions. They got to be on set with you. And a lot of Black kids don't have that privilege. So to have all these Black kids there and it's their first acting job and then they're so good and now they've like grown with this show. But yeah,
don't kids call you are... Miss James.
No, they call me Ava. Okay. Which is fine.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's what I was going to say. The kids are like the least annoying as far as like approaching me as a character. They could call me whatever. Of course they think that's what who I am. Yeah. And I really like, and I don't mind performing for them. Like, you want me to do the TikTok dances with you and all that? Like, I'm just like, I don't want them to feel like they have a job. I think that's lame. Like, you're a child. Like, let's have fun. And yeah, and reward them for being so chill. Yeah.
When the show was entering its second season, you made the decision to move out here, obviously. And I know Tyler had to persuade you not to buy a Mazda, to go a little
story.
A little, but I'm more curious about...
Congrats, actually. I love a Mazda.
I'm more curious what that transition was like, moving out here, that period of settling in. And
I had lived in L.A. for a short period of time just for the job. Yeah. Like, oh, I got a six-month. Right.
Yeah.
There you go. 4 months, blah, blah, blah. And then I would just go back to New York. And that's what happened with the first season. We had a short season. Well, I remember we did the pilot and I was like, that was cool. I went right back home.
Yeah.
And then we got picked up. Now, truly didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, well, okay. Then we like did 13 seasons in the middle of the pandemic, by the way. You know, I feel like a lot of people, of course, have like wipe that from their brain, but we did all of that with the mask and PPE, and so that was just like a whirlwind of things happening. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's a hit, 22 episodes next season. So that's 9 months out of the year. I'm like, well, I guess I live in LA now. And so yeah, it was a big transition. I've been in New York for, you know, a long time, and I am a New Yorker. You hear it?
Yeah.
And I'm a New Yorker, and you know, my family is still on the East Coast, and my friends, and my nightlife, and my community. And so, yeah, it's been a big transition, and I've left all my comedians and hang with actors. Yeah, and so, and that's all right.
Obviously, in the growth with Ava, is there a limit to the growth you would like to see with her, or is there something that you don't want to see from Ava as the series progresses?
I mean, I don't want to see it, and I'm not afraid that this is going to happen, because if it would have, it would have happened already. One thing I'm very pleased with is, although we're revealing more about her, her core personality stays the same. She's still that bitch. And I liked, especially when she got fired, it wasn't like this big on her part of like, oh, woe is me. What am I going to do now? You know, she was instantly like, next, find out that wasn't even her main job.
Right, okay. Right.
Okay. So I loved that. And the next time you see her, she's like rising from the audience for her speaking engagements. And yeah, she
had, getting that money.
Picking up her chest.
Getting that money.
But that's who she is. She's a hustler. That's what I really
relate to
with her. Like, I get that. Like, next, let's move. Like, and anyone who dares to let me go, that's your loss, because I'm killing it and at doing multiple things, which is like not only relating to being a hustler, at the core of that is relating to being poor. That's what you got to do. You got to have multiple streams. You know, that's what all those lame guys are talking about. Multiple streams, you know. So I really, yeah, I'm glad. And I saw a couple people like, oh, you know, that might have been, I hope that we find out she's been like lying this whole time, or she lives in a, she's too bad for that. Like, it can be and is very true that this person exists who is a hustler, who is as fly as she says she is, and who has not only book smarts but street smarts, which I think is very underrated, or what's the word I'm looking for? Not estimated, not valued.
Not valued.
As much as like a book learning. She has both.
Can I ask, before we wrap, like, what is it like to have your performance sort of captured in meme form and live on in that way. And do you find yourself actively thinking about that now?
No, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, I'll see a meme and it's not even me. I don't see it as myself.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't see it as myself. Maybe the first season, I was like, oh my God, I can't open my phone without seeing myself. And I also was living in a place where the billboard was like right
across
from my window, like just me. I was like, that's weird. It's really been a real, they said I could curse, a real mindfuck sometimes seeing myself so much and not even just in the context of the show. That's what a meme is. It's like people are like, send a thread about taxes and then it's me. I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? So that's but now I'm taking it more like, oh, wow, this character is like iconic. Not like, it's iconic. Like, she's in a lexicon. She's going to be around forever. Like, anytime somebody plays back that ass up, they think about me, you know.
Talk about that moment. Because I was leading up to it. I didn't want to end totally on a...
I can't be any... everywhere I walk in, I walk into the Ralphs, back that ass up on it. Everybody like, hey, that's for you, you know, so...
But the way people like glommed on to that, like it was all over TikTok. Like, this is me, or I relate. Like, this is me in my kitchen.
Excellent writing, excellent character development, because that is the song. It's not, nothing is written because we just want it to be. You know what I mean? That is the jam that people such as Ava and people in that age group, you hear it, you on the dance floor, and it would make you act out at work. Like, it's true. So
was that so fun to do?
Man, I was so nervous.
Were you worried you were not backing it up right?
One, not even backing it up right. It was like such a... I had to find a middle ground.
You couldn't go crazy?
ABC, you know. I feel like I could have went crazy and they would have cut it up, but I also wanted it to be... You know, I know grandmas and kids is watching, and also I wanted it to be funny, too. So I was trying to do so much in that little... time. We had Randall, he's circling around. First of all, how that shot, you know,
so like
cinematic,
the timing. Mm-hmm, 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 I couldn't like wrap my head around how perfectly outfit, you timed it.
You know, I had a silk blouse, I was like, I can't be sweaty, I still gotta look fly, the hair gotta flow, gotta be a little funny, gotta be a little sexy, gotta be believable that I'm like letting loose. Like, it was a lot. Again, we doing so much and I'm doing so much in a short amount of time. Like, so I think that maybe that scene was maybe 30 seconds. I had to convey all of that in a dance. I'm not even saying anything. I'm doing my little giggle, you know, that's all on, cause that's what girls do when we get, you know, so I had to like convey all of that and remember like what that feels like to hear that song, you know?
But to go from something like that, which again, like the joy and fun of a scene like that to the depth we saw this season from her, like I said, with like the moments of vulnerability, it's such a testament to you and what you're delivering. So kudos to you. I can't wait to see what's ahead with season 5.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Of course, that was great. Like, keep your eye on this kid here. That's some great questions.
And after the break, Mark's interview with Aaron Pierre.
For the Los Angeles Times and The Envelope, I'm Mark Olson. And we're here today with actor Aaron Pierre to talk about the movie Rebel Ridge. Aaron, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And in part, I mentioned that we're here to talk about Rebel Ridge just because you've been so busy these past few years. I can imagine there are times when you're like, what am I here to talk about? Like, you have so many projects that you've been involved in.
I've been very fortunate and very blessed on my journey. I'm just trying to keep it about the work, keep it about a commitment to doing the best work I can, a commitment to evolution and growth, and just enjoying the moment.
Because when you came to Rebel Ridge, there initially was another actor in the project who left, and I'm so curious, for you, did you feel like you were sort of like jumping onto a moving train? Like, what was it like to get involved in a project that in some ways was like already in motion?
The first time I heard about this project was from Jeremy himself. My team had read the script, which we now know to be Rebel Ridge, and they were just really thrilled and excited to have something cross their desks that felt original, that felt exciting, and that energized them in a way that perhaps they hadn't been energized in a long time. So more or less immediately, I read the script, got onto a Zoom with Jeremy himself, and we just immediately connected. I think there is something to be said for instincts and something to be said for a gut feeling. And I think in both departments, we had a positive experience of that with one another, and we felt as though this collaboration would only be conducive to an enjoyable time. And that's certainly what was had.
And did you know director Jeremy Saulnier's work from his other films, Green Room or Hold the Dark? Like, were you familiar with him before this came to you?
Yes, I was familiar. My favorite is Blue Ruin. Mm. I think that is a masterpiece. And I think that is Jeremy arguably at one of his happiest, you know, so far as a filmmaker. And just, you know, getting to flex all of those different muscles and talents that he has. After seeing Blue Ruin, I always wanted to work with him. I didn't know if it would ever come to fruition or if it would even be a possibility. And then Rebel Ridge came along and we got rocking and rolling.
And then you mentioned instinct and how you sort of have to learn to kind of trust your gut on like working with someone like Jeremy saying yes to a project. At the end of it, I'm curious, like, do you ever get some sense of like what that instinct was, or like, do you have your feelings confirmed for you? Like, I'm just curious, like when you kind of like do something on instinct and then later, do you get a better sense of like, oh, that was what I was responding to. That's why I wanted to do this.
I have this sort of checklist for myself, any project that I do. And when I wrap a project at the end of it, if I can say that I did my best, to give my best. And also if I can say that I earned my own respect, which is a very challenging thing to do because I demand so much from myself and I'm hypercritical of myself. But if I can check those two boxes, then I feel satisfied. I think I don't try and control or puppeteer anything beyond that, because the space that I'm in, you're in, we're in, it is so subjective, but that's why we love it. It's mm-hmm. art. And really, if I can just sort of have that peace in myself of, you know, I really gave everything I had, then beyond that, whatever happens is really just additional blessings. Mm. And, you know, to have the response that Rebel Ridge received was beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest with you. And quite, speaking candidly, I'm still processing it now. It was really moving.
Mm-hmm.
I think in part it was so moving because we poured so much into it, everybody in every department. I'm not speaking exclusively about the cast. I'm not speaking exclusively about the director and the producerial team. I'm talking about everybody from Crafty to catering to Transpo to the Teamsters to the crew. Everybody poured so much into it. We were all there every day. And I think there is something so beautiful about a project which is so physical and demands so much and is outside largely in part. That sort of brings you all together, you know?
When you say that you're still processing your feelings about it, what's changed for you? Like, how do you feel like your response to the movie has evolved?
I think what I'm processing still is just the abundance of joy that it gave people and the reception it received. So many people have reached out to myself, to Jeremy, to others who were part of the project and shared what it meant to them, why it meant what it meant to them, and even requested, a sequel, you know what I mean, and things like this. So it was just, I just feel very grateful, very thankful, and really the film wouldn't be what it is today without the audience. And that really ties into why I do what I do, I think, mm-hmm. because the reason I don't take myself seriously, but I do take what I do in my craft very seriously. That is me attempting to honor the time and the energy that an audience gifts you with when they engage with a film, or they engage with a TV series, or they come to the theater and watch a play that you're in. Life is busy. Life is hard. People have multiple things to juggle. So when people gift you with that time, I feel as though as an artist, as an actor, whatever I want to describe myself as, I have a commitment to honor that. And that really just ties into, you know, just the audience response, just to get that just feels really special. Mm.
And one of the things that's so remarkable about your performance in the film is you remain so calm through the whole thing, and that no matter how wild the story and the action gets, like, you're still very cool throughout.
Here come your peeps.
Chief!
You want to honor that deal, or do I got to transition to
him? Put some distance between you.
Let's not do that.
How did you sort of come to that choice? And, like, tell me a little bit about just, like, that essential nature of your performance.
That's a great question. I arrived at the decision that I wanted his energy to be loudest, quietest person in the room. And what I mean by that is I wanted his silence to speak tremendous volumes. Somebody who steps into a room and they don't say anything, but the fact that they don't say anything is so loud. The fact that they are not demonstrative in their physicality is so loud, and almost their lack of perhaps emoting at times, their lack of being physical at times, is what indicates their capacity and is what tells you everything you need to know about them. That's what I was sort of playing with during the entire filming process. And it was a lot of fun to do so. That's one of the beautiful things about a character that is so wonderfully written. You know, Terry is written so in such a dynamic way, in such a nuanced way, and really such a generous way. And I have to credit that to Jeremy as the writer. He was so generous in how he created Terry, so that the individual that portrayed him had so much to work from.
And now people always often talk about Jeremy's work as being slow burn thrillers. That's what they call them, because they typically take a while to sort of, like, get to the action and to really, like, pop off. Was pacing something that you talked about with Jeremy, both in how the story was going to be paced, but also how your performance was going to be paced? Like, for you, like, how do you sort of capture that sense of the slow burn?
That's really interesting. I think as an actor, I think doing things in a slow pace is not something I have an issue with. If anything, directors have to say, hey, Aaron, let's, you know, because I like to enjoy moments, mm-hmm. You know, in the context of portraying a character. So really, this was like exactly the lane that I enjoy operating in so far as action and thriller. And I love enjoying those beats and enjoying those moments and really being unapologetic about it. So it was a lot of fun, you know, the moment where, for example, you know, Terry rides into, you know, where the sheriff's office is, and he puts his pedal bike down and he just waits there calmly. And then, you know, Don Johnson comes out and he has this whole speech about PACE and the acronym, and he breaks it down. And, you know, I could be wrong, but I feel like a number of other action movies might have taken the route of let's just get straight to it. But I love that Jeremy had his character, character break down what was going to happen should this police department not adhere to his request. I love moments like that.
So the P is for primary. That's me riding into town with my bag of money. A is for alternate. That's a deal we apparently never made. C is my contingency. That's the restaurant owner you put out of business this morning. And there it is.
I love that Jeremy was so unapologetic about it. And that gave me permission as his collaborator within this film to also be unapologetic in the pace in which we navigate the story.
That also is one of my favorite scenes in the movie as well, because it's this sort of very tense dialogue scene between you and Don Johnson. And then it kind of suddenly erupts into a very physical, like, kind of rough and tumble fight, like a physical sequence between you, Don, and another actor. And I have to say, it sure looks like that's really you in that sort of, like, close combat with those two guys. What kind of training did you do for that? And what was it like to sort of go from the, like, the paced, restrained dialogue to, like, break into the action like that?
Oh, it was so much fun. You'll hear me commend and celebrate the crew a lot, because they deserve it. They earned it. And they're just phenomenal. So I really had a lot of guidance. I had a lot of help with the physicality of Terry, with the intellect of Terry, from the stunt department and from our advisors, you know, MacMap instructors, for example. So we really did a lot of physical training prior to production commencing, pre-production. We did wrestling training. We did boxing training. We sparred. So it was really in my body. I'm already, a student of martial arts, and I love it. It's, you know, it's the most humbling thing in the world, and I just adore it. And I'll always be a student of it. So that was really fun for me to be able to do that for my job, you know. And, you know, we would wrestle, we would box. And so by the time we got to choreography, it really was just, it just felt somewhat fluid and easy because it moving in that way was already in my body. Mm. That was how we warmed up. That's how we would sometimes start days. That's sometimes how we would end days. That's sometimes how we would spend a day on the weekend. So it was really in me at that time. And again, it goes back to, you know, being the loudest, quietest person in the room. I like that Terry goes from that speech to, okay, you've now left me no option but to demonstrate everything I just told you about that I had the capacity to do, but I was hoping not to have to do. There was sort of a running joke in the crew that Terry likes to, he likes to teach manners. And that's sort of, that was like a running joke. And I guess that's kind of what he did. Mm. He does, yeah.
There also is a scene in the film where Terry, your character, is on a bicycle and he's racing a bus.
Yes.
And I've seen some of the behind the scenes footage. You're on this kind of contraption that's like a sort of a motorized cart that has a bicycle sticking off the front of it. But I have to say, I would 100% believe that you were like racing that bus on a
bicycle. See, here's the thing. So, as you know, it takes a lot to make a film, and it takes a lot to capture a scene like that. There was a version of that bus scene where I'm pursuing the bus on a pedal bike, just me. There's a version of it where I'm pursuing the bus on a almost like a bike rig that is fueled by a motor, almost like a small go-kart. Mm-hmm. There's a version of it where I'm quite literally attached to the bus, and I'm physically pedaling and exerting myself as hard as I can. And then Big Bruce Lawson, who I love, by the way, he's gently pushing me closer and closer to where the driver is driving the bus. So all three of these versions all require me to pedal, but not all of them are, am I making movement purely on my own accord? Mm-hmm. Then you put them all together, and then and you have Jeremy do it, and it looks seamless and wonderful.
And now, something like that, how surprised are you when you see the final product? You're like, whoa, that looks pretty good.
You know, I have to be honest. With Jeremy, I wasn't surprised. I was like, of course, you know, Jeremy's Jeremy. You know, he does wonderful work all the time, as far as I'm concerned. I remember well before the film came out, he showed me an early cut of, I think it was maybe like the first eighth of the film, and I was just really excited by it. And then to see the final product, I just commend him.
There also are a number of scenes in the film where you disassemble a gun in your a handgun in your hands without really looking at it while you're doing it, like you're looking at another person while you're taking this gun apart. How hard is that? Like, to me, I don't think I could ever manage that. What was it like for you to sort of, like, had you had any kind of weapons training from, like, other projects?
Not prior to Rebel Ridge. But I really had to immerse myself in that in order to achieve what I wanted to achieve, which was authenticity and which was honoring Marines. That's very important to me. So as it's very important to me with every role that I play to be authentic and to honor the individual and the history of that individual and their respective communities and units. So I really immersed myself in it. And even reflecting on it now, I'm surprised that I managed to even get to the level where I could do a scene and be looking you in the eye, but disassembling a gun or, you know, unloading a gun and unloading a magazine and putting that on the side. And it was, they really had me in a sort of like a boot camp. Mm. And luckily I took to it. because one thing about Jeremy is we will not move on from the scene until it's seamless. And that's what I love about him.
I know, were there any other films that you and Jeremy would talk about, or maybe that he wanted you to show you as a reference, so that you were sort of like in your mind as you were working on this part?
Actually, no. I mean, of course, you know, he and I were aware of wonderful films that share similar themes. But for the whole maybe 3 month shoot, we didn't actually speak about, as far as I recall, and this was some time ago now, but we didn't actually speak about any other action film. And I even remember Dawn. Jeremy and I, one day we were in, what scene were we shooting? I think we were shooting the scene where Don's character takes Terry with David Denman's character to the hospital before they break the news to him. It was that day we were filming that scene. And Don actually doesn't watch any films when he's shooting a film. So that was kind of the energy, actually, while we were filming Rebel Ridge, of let's just focus on this and creating this original film without influence, you know, or at least without any conscious influence, you know. It was, of course, it's art, so subconsciously you're always going to be influenced and it's going to be a version of, you know, but it's, and that's inspiration, but we really just focused on Rebel Ridge and how do we want to tell the story of Rebel Ridge.
Tell me more about working with Don Johnson. Like, he seems like a super cool guy that it would be fun to like meet and hang around with. But then it's funny that he's so good at playing this like really smug jerk of like a crooked sheriff.
Yeah, I mean, Don is wonderful. Don and I get along really wonderfully. It's so funny. I think actually the fact that we got along so well allowed us to create such tension and friction within the scenes, because we were able to, outside of the context of the scenes, discuss what we wanted to achieve and how we wanted to achieve it, the different versions of this and the different iterations of it. And then when the cameras started rolling, we had substance because we had everything we had discussed. And in those moments, it wasn't Aaron and Don, it was really Terry and the sheriff. Jeremy creates this environment where it really is conducive to, I think, the best work, because he protects with everything the scene and the place where the scene is taking place. So you can have a laugh and a joke outside, because, you know, as soon as you step into that atmosphere, that arena, you're in that world now.
Before 2 days ago, I'd never really been in a street fight.
Well, I've been in plenty.
Yeah, I can feel that from you. It's gotten out of hand.
We can agree on that.
Got me thinking. What if we just walk away?
Well, now you're starting to talk.
But then I was like, nah.
I know the story of the film is about a black man coming into a southern town. Race is a real undercurrent to the story, and yet it's something that, apart from kind of one scene where a black female police officer sort of calms down a group of white men, it's never really explicit in the film. And for you, what was it like to have that sort of bubbling underneath? And did you like the fact that it there was never a big conversation about it, and that there's not that scene in the movie? How did you feel about the way the story dealt with that?
I think Jeremy did a brilliant job of navigating multiple important and pressing issues all within one film. And I think he did it in a way that was not didactic. And I might even say that when things, in this particular context, him navigating those things in a way that isn't didactic allowed for it to resonate even deeper with audiences. Because versus the audiences feeling like they were being sat down, it was more of an invitation to come and engage in this conversation with us within the context of a film.
And then I want to go back to something you said earlier, that for you it's important when you're acting that you feel on a project you have to earn your own respect. And I'm very taken by that idea. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means to you, and what in essence, what does it take for you to earn your own respect?
When an audience engages with your work in any capacity, theater, film, TV, radio, wherever it is, that's them gifting you with their time. Time is precious. Time is valuable. I need to feel as though I've served the character. I need to feel as though I've served the story. I need to feel as though I've served the creative team. And I need to feel as though I've served the audiences. Even if an audience walks away from something and they say, that wasn't for me, that's okay, because the work is subjective. Just so long as the result of that wasn't me not giving my all. If I don't give my all, I'm not at peace, you know? And I think that really just comes from gratitude for the opportunity. And that ferocity of work ethic that I have is just fueled by gratitude. You know, I'm well aware that this is not something that is a given to be blessed in a position where you can tell stories on this level with such wonderful creatives. And also I've been in a position where this is everything I wanted to do, all I could do, but I was unemployed and I was, you know, in a very financially challenging position, and telling people I'm an actor, but I had nothing to show. So I think actually having all of those life experiences of those rough times and those challenging times, when I am now in this position where I'm fortunate to have an abundance of options and things available for me to engage with, it's just never missed on me, ever. It's just never missed on me. And it just would never feel right to take that for granted. What are we doing here? We have an opportunity. Let's give it our all. Maybe it lands flat. Maybe it's a major success, but whatever we're doing, let's not hold our punches. Let's give everything we've got.
And then last year you were also in Mufasa, The Lion King. You did the voice of Mufasa.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, now, you had previously worked with Barry Jenkins on The Underground Railroad.
That's big bro. Yeah.
And as I understand it, he initially reached out to you. He saw you on stage and he just sent you a DM to like reach out.
He did.
Yeah. And now as an actor, like that, is that kind of what you're like hope? Like you can't even really hope for that to happen in a way.
I thought somebody was messing with me. I promise you. I think we had just finished an evening performance at the Globe, Shakespeare's Globe, on the South Bank of Othello. Mark Rylance was playing Iago. Andre Holland was playing Othello. Phenomenal actors, both. The whole team, phenomenal actors. And I just finished the evening show, and I think I was coming out of the underground at Earl's Court Station, and my phone pinged, and it was a DM from Barry. And I was like, this has got to be a joke. Somebody has got to be sort of like, you know, they've heard me, you know, talking about how much I want to collaborate with him, heard me talking extensively about what he achieved with Moonlight. And then I opened it and it had the, you know, the little verified blue tick. And I said, this is actually Barry Jenkins. And he was just saying, he was like, hey, man, I really enjoyed your work on the stage as Cassio. I have this project upcoming and I would like to engage in a conversation with you about it. That was a really special moment for me.
And then with The Lion King in particular, what was it like taking on the role of Mufasa? I mean, that's originally voiced by James Earl Jones. Was it a challenge for you to find your own way, essentially your own voice for that character?
First and foremost, James Earl Jones originated Mufasa and is and always will be synonymous with Mufasa. His portrayal is just so beautiful and timeless, and is not only with me for the rest of my life, but with all of us for the rest of our lives. And most importantly, it can never be matched. That actually brought me a lot of peace. Entering that conversation and entering that creative process, knowing that that is in its own stratosphere, And rightly so. It gave me a lot of peace and it gave me permission to find my own version. And I hope that he would be proud of the version that I discovered. And I hope that he would feel as though we did everything we could to uphold the legacy that he established and the legacy that he built, because that was our intention and that was what we were striving for. And just on a separate note, James Earl Jones he's the top of the mountain for me. You know, I study him. He's just the top of the mountain for me.
And then as we're having this conversation, you're in the midst of production on Lanterns, which is a very different production from The Lion King. I've seen this iteration of the Green Lantern story described as a sci-fi True Detective. And I'm curious just how that project is going for you and what the experience so far of shooting that has been like.
It's been great. It's been a really beautiful process and experience. Everybody is so close. Everybody is so tight and connected. And I think that is because we all love this project.
And then you also are in the upcoming season of The Morning Show, again, a very different project. And I'm curious, for you as an actor, do you feel like this has kind of become your moment? Like, as an actor, I think you work so long and so hard. What is it like for you when it seems like suddenly so many things are kind of lining up for you all of a sudden?
It's very surreal. It's very surreal. There was a time when there was nothing available to me. Despite me trying to have things available to me, you know. So it's very surreal. Again, abundantly grateful. And I think it's about just utilizing these moments to learn, to grow, to evolve, and just to serve this space as best I can. It's impossible not to have an amazing time on The Morning Show. All of those wonderful artists and creatives, we had a really great time.
Well, Aaron Pierre, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right, that's this week's episode of The Envelope. And folks, I'm telling you, next week, you don't want to miss this. We're mixing it up a little bit. We're going to do it live in front of an audience with Paradise's Dan Fogelman. It's going to be special. We'll see you then.